Guy in the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Real Clear Politics about the Edmund Burke Foundation, a new enterprise, to my knowledge, that represents, quote, national conservatism. This, of course, derives from the original genius, Edmund Burke, who was a member of Parliament during the debates, and especially 1775, about this group of men in the colonies who were in rebellion from the king and the country. Edmund Burke spoke eloquently. Others did, too, in the parliamentary debates. There was recognition that Lord North's government and George Germain, who was appointed Secretary of State for the colonies, were leading the United Kingdom in a bad direction. The American colonies were Englishmen, and those Englishmen were standing up for their understanding of liberty. And the Atlantic between London and New York and Boston was vast in the 18th century. None of those facts weighed particularly on the king, who was interested in enforcing his will, especially after the Tea Party. Now, I won't go any more, because Peter's article stimulated all my recent memories of reading Joseph Ellis's new book about the cause, about these men and their wives and how they risked everything during a smallpox pandemic. Peter, a very good evening to you. National conservatism. I ask a rhetorical question. Have they read Joseph Ellis recently? Are they familiar with the risks that the Continental Congress took and that the dare of these men to break away from the most powerful military enterprise in the solar system? Good evening to you, Peter.
Good evening to you, John. I have my doubts whether they've read Ellis recently. I even have doubts whether they've read Edmund Burke recently, because as your wonderful introduction suggested, Edmund Burke had to remind colleagues in Parliament, the king, king's ministers, that even if the Americans did not have a solid legal claim to have representation if taxes were going to be imposed upon them, nevertheless, it was the preeminent feature of their national character was the love of freedom, which, yes, they had acquired as Englishmen, and it developed even more strongly in the colonies. And Burke's advice was, if you want peaceful and stable relation with your colonies, forget the legal arguments. You have to satisfy their longing for freedom, their expectation of representation over laws that affect them. And when we think about conservatism today and what it is that American conservatives ought to be conserving, I think we ought to keep in mind that I hope to a significant extent that love of freedom continues to be a predominating character, predominating feature of the American character.
What is the mission statement of the Edmund Burke Foundation or of national conservatism? What is the ambition?
Well, of course, their thought, and there's much to this idea, is that we have neglected the extent to which any political society requires a common culture, dedication to a common culture, and that there are tendencies, schools of thought in our world that disparage the idea of common culture, that disparage tradition, disparage the nation. All this seems to me to be fair, and to the extent that national conservatism calls us to return to America's national traditions, respect them, learn from them, cherish them, conserve them, I'm in favor of it. However, many members of the national conservative movement draw an invidious distinction between the respect for a nation's traditions, or let's say they even refer to the idea of the nation, an abstract idea. This would have caused Burke to roll over his grave, as you suggested. They draw this invidious distinction between the idea of American nation and freedom. But there's this puzzle at the core of America's national traditions. As Edmund Burke himself realized in 1775, at the core of our national spirit is the love of freedom. So calling Americans to return to our national traditions, respect them, conserve them, is recalling us, I believe, to the principles of the Declaration of Independence, to the American Constitution, to our constitutional traditions, to the creation of a republic which gives wide scope to people to pursue happiness.
Peter, does these remarks by the chairman of the Edmund Burke Foundation, Yoram Hazeny, you've read them and I have not, so I hesitate. But at some moment in your essay, I was reminded of George III saying, but they're mine. They're going to do what I say, and their denial of my authority in the Boston Tea Party is unacceptable. They will come to heel. They will bend the knee. Is that part of the case here, that the Edmund Burke Foundation believes that we in the United States must follow its understanding of what it is to be loyal?
Well, we should be clear here. So the national conservatism, the movement supported by the Edmund Burke Foundation, and it has attracted a variety of conservatives, including people associated with something called integralism, which is a form of conservatism that seems to me, at least, more at home in Europe, a kind of throne and altar conservatism. This is not what Hazeny himself was arguing for, but Yoram Hazeny does take aim at a distinction that's fundamental to liberal democracy, as I understand it, the distinction between the public and the private. And Hazeny presents the distinction between the public-private as somehow as an invention of convenience in the 1950s by American conservatives that served its purpose in the Cold War, but has outlived its usefulness. It is responsible for, you've heard this phrase before, the creation of a naked public sphere that we associate with Richard John Neuhaus. Now, the balance may be out of whack, but as you know, the distinction between public and private was not invented in the 1950s. It actually is traceable to the Bible, to Jesus's distinction between that which belongs to Caesar, that which belongs to God. It's deeply inscribed in America's political traditions. And a reason for keeping separate public and private, not using government to promote or enforce religion, is because of the belief, which has deep roots in the Christian tradition, that that we don't entrust to the political authorities responsibility for religion, because that will damage true piety. So I see that public-private distinction is essential to the form of government that we have established in the United States.
A fine case can be made that the U.S. right now is going through turmoil, but we're in a pandemic. Is there irony here, Peter, that the men and women who stand for the traditions of the original founding fathers are wandering into an authoritarianism, a vague authoritarianism? I don't have a name for it. We have about a minute.
Yes, well, I am worried about that. In other words, the mistake, I think, is to see the authoritarianism of progressivism and respond by thinking that what we need, the alternative that we need, is an authoritarianism of the right or government supervision of the right. I believe what we need is to return to the founding principles, which to the extent possible identify the common good with the creation of wide latitude for individuals, their families, and their communities to govern themselves.
Peter, we're told that in the colonies in 1775, there was one third that was independent, one third that was loyal to the king, one third that was troublemakers, the Adams crowd. Right. Is the national conservatism, are they the loyalists of the 21st century?
You know, it's a very interesting question. Of course, we don't have a king to be loyal to, but there is a yearning for a central authority that will promote or impose on the country the one true interpretation of virtue and piety. And that way, I think, lies a lot of trouble for the American experiment in ordered liberty.
Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing at Real Clear Politics. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.